continue the Sheol in Gemara. Gemara says Rav Hanan ben Rava was learning, quoting one of the rabbis of the Gemara. He was sitting in front of Rav. He spoke about this rabbi, the Mishnah. He said, this rabbi stated, the name of the rabbi is Rabbi Zechariah ben Kefutel. And the Rav made a motion to him, like, you're wrong. It's not Rabbi Zechariah ben Kefutel, it's Rabbi Zechariah ben Kevutel. In other words, there was a question about the exact name of this rabbi, and it was important he corrected him, state the true exact name of the rabbi. Why? Why is that so important to be so careful with the name of the rabbi? Yemena says, and the Abinazal explains, that when a person learns, speaks about a statement of Gemara, or a statement of Shulchan Aruch, the name of a certain rabbi, then he should never make that statement alone, without saying the origin. Because when you state the name of the rabbi who said it, then that rabbi comes to life. The Gemara says that in the grave, that rabbi's lips begin to move. Plus the fact that in bringing about a rejuvenation, a life, to this great rabbi of the past, on this world again, that means that this rabbi is now living in two worlds simultaneously. This was the prayer of King David. King David said, Agura be'ohacha yamit olamim, allow me to live in two worlds simultaneously, in olam haba and olam hazeh at the same time. How can that be done? But if I will be in olam haba, and someone on earth will quote me, but I will come to life in the grave, in olam hazeh too. So I'll be living in both worlds simultaneously. So therefore, Benedel says, no. When you quote this rabbi, say a statement in his name, and mention his name, he comes to life here. What happens then? Your neshama and his neshama get together. They merge. There is a closeness, a touching of neshamot. Imagine the zechut of a person whose neshama merges with the neshama of a great rabbi in the past. One of the rabbis of the Shulchan Aruch, or the rabbis, still further back, the rabbis of the Gemara. That's why it is so important to say the name of the rabbi who originated the statement, and to say the name correctly. Therefore, Rav corrected this rabbi who was making the statement. But the Gemara asks now, why did Rav motion with his hand? Why didn't he come out openly and say to him, correct it, the correct name is Rabbi Kutau? Yemena answers that Rav was in the middle of Kriyat Shema at the time, so naturally he couldn't speak. He had to make a motion. So the Yemena asks, if he was in the middle of Kriyat Shema, we know a law that in the middle of Kriyat Shema it is a sin to make any kind of a motion, either with a hand or to wink with the eye. You want to give a person a message of some kind. The hand or with the eye is forbidden during Kriyat Shema. Nothing can be done by a person in Kriyat Shema. He must concentrate purely on Kriyat Shema and nothing else. Now, how could we say that Rav made this motion with his hand? The Gemara answers that this rule, where we say a person cannot move any part of his body during Kriyat Shema, applies only to the first paragraph of Kriyat Shema. Rav was in the middle of the second paragraph, Ayayim Shamoah, there it is permissible. Now, this is the law, but the custom is to be as strict in the entire Kriyat Shema as last two chapters as in the first. It teaches us, though, how a person should never let his mind even wander during Kriyat Shema, to say it with such kevanah, knowing the Kedusha of Kriyat Shema, that it is the holiest prayer that exists bar none. Though it is said sitting, it is still holier than the Amidah, which is said standing, because the Kriyat Shema is mid-oraita, mid-a-Torah, and it's a chapter written in the Torah, while the Amidah is mid-Rabbanan. The Yemena says, still, there is still a difference between Kriyat Shema and Amidah, Shmona Esrei, where the Shmona Esrei is more strict than the Kriyat Shema, aside from the fact that there you must stand with your feet together. In the Kriyat Shema, it says, V'dibarta bam. V'dibarta bam, you should speak these words of Kriyat Shema. For the mitzvah to speak them, you do not get the mitzvah of Kriyat Shema if you read the Sidur. You can't read it without moving your lips. You must move your lips, and you must sound the words. You have to hear yourself say the words. V'dibarta bam, the Yemena says you must speak these words, bam, these words, but not the words of Tefillah, not the words of the Amidah. In the Amidah, it's forbidden to speak out the words.
move your lips, but make no sound at all. To make no sound at all for two reasons. One, because the Gemara says that if you say the words of Amidah low, but loud enough for your neighbor, person near you, to hear you, your tefillah is rejected, cannot be accepted. Question arises in the Zohar Kadosh, what is meant by saying it silently? This is called a tefillah belachash, prayer silently. What is meant silently? Silently means that nobody else should hear you. How about yourself? If you say it so silently that only you yourself can hear these words coming from you, but no one near you, is that permissible? The Zohar Kadosh says, definitely not. A tefillah, which is accepted in heaven, is that tefillah which is completely silent. So silent that your ears cannot hear the sound coming from your mouth. But you must still move your lips. The Gemara says this word, v'dibarta bem, has another meaning. V'dibarta bem means speak them. What? These words of Torah. You should learn to speak only Torah. This you may speak. In other words, Hashem gave you a mouth, a tongue, the power of speech. He gave you this power. But he gave you this power with a restriction. Power is given to you with permission to speak words of Torah, words of holiness. You were not given permission to speak words of batala, words that are useless, words that do not have any kedushah in them whatsoever, and certainly not words of evil, lashon hara, lies, profanity. Therefore, the Gemara says that a person who speaks words that are completely without kedushah at all, wasted words, that person is actually committing a sin of the Torah, going against the pasuk in the Torah, which says, "V'dibarta tabam," you may speak these words of Torah, but if you don't, if you speak other type of words, it is breaking this law of v'dibarta tabam. So major is this law. Even it says, but a rabbi, Rabbi Yehuda, once asked Eliyahu Hanavi, today is Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur has just ended. I want to know how come that Mashiach did not come. After all, the Gemara tells us that Mashiach will come when all Jews will do Teshuvah. Mashiach will come when there will be purity among Jews. You couldn't get better purity than on Yom Kippur. Your shuls are packed. Kavanah people have. Everyone is fasting. At the end of Kippur, everyone came out clean and pure. What will happen tomorrow is a different problem. But right now, the Jews are all pure. Tell me, why does not Mashiach come right now? And Eliezer answered, you ask why Mashiach does not come right now. You are sitting in a kness here, in a shul. You are praying with Kavanah, and you're pure. Your mind is pure. Your actions are pure. The Jews here are filled with good intent, filled with purity. You don't know what's going on outside. You think that all the Jews are this way? Do you know that right now, today, on Yom Kippur, in your city, what sins were committed? Sins of adultery and zanut were committed on Yom Kippur, Bar Minan, Chas V'Shalom. And you ask why Mashiach didn't come? You think that all Jews are that pure. But when you have such major sins committed, this affects the whole world. A Jew can do a wrong type of sin that's so evil, so major, that it can affect the entire Jewish people. So Rabbi Yehuda asked, that's horrible. Well, what does, you are in heaven, what does Hashem say about this? This is the day of judgment. And woe is to us if Hashem has to judge us by this type of act. The enemy is that Hashem says that I judge the Jews for good, l'kaf zechut, because it's the fault of the Yetzer Hara, the angel of evil, the Satan. He misleads. These Jews don't really want to commit sins. If they didn't have the Yetzer Hara, they'd be perfect. They didn't have this temptation, this evil inclination. They would serve Hashem too, just like others. They fall victim to the Yetzer Hara, so that, of course, they may be guilty. But still, there is a point about which to judge them much more leniently. This is the defense that Hashem attributes to the sake of the Jews. So the Yehuda asked, that's what Hashem says. But what about the eternity? What does the Satan say at a time like this? Imagine the satanic coming out with a complaint, a claim like this. The reality is, unfortunately, the Satan has no power on Yom Kippur. Because the Satan, the word has Satan. The Satan is Begimetria 364. Teach us that in 364 days, the Satan has power, Bibikatrik, to harm, to attack the Jews. One day in a year, on Yom Kippur, he is harmless. There's no power to attack. Yisrael Kadosh explains this in depth, very much depth. We'll attempt to explain this if you concentrate. The Pasuk says, Shatu ha'am v'laktu. Hashem sent the men down to earth. They weren't tzaddikim, to whom the men came directly to their door. They didn't have to walk out at all. They didn't walk far to get it. For them, the men came directly down. For the Benonim, the middle-of-the-road type of Jews, they had to walk out to collect it. But the Nishaim, that's Ha'am, not the Bnei Yisrael Ha'am, Enevrav, Shatu Ha'am, these people had to spread, scatter out, and collect. The Zohar Kadosh says Shatu comes from the word Shtut, foolishness. Those who were fools, those who did not have the Buddha, they had to go out to try to collect it, and they were unsuccessful. The word Shatu, Shin, Tet, Vav, there are two things about that word. One, that it has the letters, same letters as Veshet. Veshet means the esophagus. There are two tubes in a person's throat, the esophagus, that's the food, or two where the food enters. The Kaneh is the trachea, the windpipe, where the air, oxygen goes through, person breathes through. Now, Shatu, also, when this foolishness becomes dragged out, increased, Zohar Kadosh says that the Vav is like dragged down, pulled down, instead of Shatu, Shintet, Vav becomes Shintet, Nun, Satan, turned to Satan, work of the Satan. But we see that the Satan has a connection with the word Veshet, esophagus, which means that the Satan has power when the esophagus functions, which means the days that a person eats. But there is one day in the Torah, one day that is according to the Taryag Mitzvot, 630 Mitzvot in the Torah, one day of fast. Especially that's Yom Kippur. On that day, there is no Veshet. There's no work for the Veshet. There's no food. There's only the Kaneh. Kaneh is a trachea alone, serves them. The Kaneh is already the opposite. Shatu, we said, is foolishness. The Pasuk says, Kaneh Chachma, Kaneh Binah. Acquire Chachma and acquire Binah. Kaneh means to acquire. Same word, Kaneh. Acquire, Kaneh means this trachea, the windpipe. So Kaneh already is a matter of Chachma, because then there is no longer a Satan, a foolishness, a misleading by the Satan. And that is why, on that day, when there's only the Kaneh, only the windpipe, and no longer the esophagus, no food, we have Chachma. We do not have the Satan at all. That's why on Kippur, there's no power for the Satan to complain, to bring charges against the Jews. This is what Rabbi Hanavi answered to Rabbi Yehuda. Hashem defends the Jews on this day. The Satan cannot argue against them, and that's how the Jews come out pure. Yehuda says, again, that in the Beit HaMikdash, the services there, service of bringing the Korbanot, started very early in the morning. In fact, we have the Shachrit, the Slah in the morning, corresponds to the special Korban that was brought in the morning. When did these services begin there? The service of the Beit HaMikdash. Yehuda says that when there was the call of the Gever, call of the Gever calling people to come, then immediately the yard of the Beit HaMikdash became filled with Jews. Yehuda asks, what is meant by the call of the Gever? What does Gever mean? Gever could be two things. Yehuda says that the Rav says Gever means a man. There are four ways to say man: Adam, Enosh, Gever, Ish. Gever is a man. Geveret, a woman. Gever is a man. This was a call of a certain man who was appointed to announce, like a Shemesh, announcing that service is about to begin. As soon as he made this announcement, the gates were opened and the yard became filled. Rabbi Shila says Gever means the rooster, call of the rooster. Because in Hebrew too, that word means rooster.
The bees were the rooster crowed, which is at daybreak. Literally at daybreak, the crow of the rooster, the gates are open, but all Jews were ready, prepared. There was no difficulty in waking up on time to come to the service at that time. But we see, though, that there is a machloket, a debate in the translation of the word given. Rav says, man, a certain man, and Mishila says, a rooster. It happened one time that Rav, now this debate was not between the two face to face. Rav was a rabbi of a certain city, and Mishila was a rabbi of a different city. But they hadn't met. It was just that Rav in his city taught this way, Mishila taught in his city differently. One day, Rav came to the city of Rabbi Shila. The custom in those days was that the chief rabbi delivered a lecture. He spoke softly, and he appointed someone to stand above him and to repeat his words loud so that the entire crowd could listen, could hear. Rav came as a visitor. Rabbi Shila did not know this was Rav. This visitor, this Oreach, he said, come on. You will be my loudspeaker for today, like a Shemesh. Rav accepted, came up to the top. Rabbi Shila was teaching, and he said, speaking about this topic, he said, and the Gever called out. Rav said, and the man called out. Rabbi Shila said to him, sir, will you say rooster? I said, Gever called out, say rooster. Rav answered, you know, you bring a beautiful instrument, musical instrument. You play it in front of people who have music appreciation, and they remark about the beauty of the music, how pleasant it is. But take this instrument and play it in front of farmers. They have no appreciation of music. They don't understand what it is. Now, here, this word, can I give it? I said this word in front of great rabbis, very great, much greater than you. And I translated man, and they accepted it because they appreciated what was right. When I come here and I say it the right way, it's not appreciated. You say, change it to rooster. Rabbi Shila said, you say it in front of great people. You must be a Rav. You must be the great Rav in front of great people because you say it in front of your uncle. Your uncle is Rabbi Chia, one of the greatest rabbis in Eretz Yisrael. And since you are the great Rav, then please sit down. It's not proper that you should be here acting as my loudspeaker. And I've said again, the person is a Mashal. He said, if a person is hired to do a day's work, then once he accepts it, he's supposed to do whatever they tell him to do. No matter how low or menial a labor is, that day's work must be done, no matter what type of work is given to him. So right now, since I started the work already, I'll finish it. Plus the fact that as a mitzvah, you're doing something holy, you increase the holiness. You do not decrease it. You don't lower it. If I leave you now, you'll have somebody else who will do a much worse job than I'm doing. Well, therefore, let me finish this. And of course, Rabbi Shila accepted, and obviously he apparently accepted too the translation of Rav, because you know the superiority of Rav. It shows again, as we said, Rabbi Shila stated this interpretation not in the presence of Rav originally. Many of these machloket we have in the Gemara were not a debate openly between two rabbis. The Gemara quotes both as debating the issue, but these two may never have met, or they may have lived in different times, just that this was stated the law one way, the other stated the opposite way, and both were authorities. The Gemara quotes them as a debate. This debate is discussed in later generations, expounding upon and explaining the reasons that each one had, and then arriving at a legal result, a decision. Yemeneh says that Rav said there was speaking about this giver, this man who announced that the Avodah, the Beit HaMikdash, is about to begin. What was this announcement? What did it consist of? There was one announcer whose name was Givini in the Beit HaMikdash. He announced, stating, "Rise, Kohanim, to your work. Arise, the Levi'im, to your singing at the place of the Korbanot. Arise, Yisrael, Jews, stand by as your Korban is being sacrificed." This announcer had such a loud voice that it traveled for a distance of 12 miles, could be heard 12 miles away. And there was a case with King Agrippas, who was walking along the road at night,
And he heard the voice of this announcer 12 miles away. When he came to his home, his palace, he sent this announcer special gifts. He was so impressed with the power of this announcer's voice. It's without a loudspeaker. He had such a powerful voice that it traveled to 12 miles. The witness says, we are impressed by the power of this announcer's voice, but it could not compare to the voice of the Kohen Gadol, who was much better, who projected much further. Because when the Kohen Gadol on Yom Kippur said the words, Ana Hashem, Hatati, Aviti, Pashati, and he said that Vidui, confession on Kippur, his voice could be heard in the city of Yericho. How far was Yericho? Yehuda says, Rabbi Yochanan said, from Yerushalayim to Yericho, 40 miles. His voice could clearly be heard 40 miles away. Now, that's one thing the Yehuda says. Note, it's not just that his voice carried four times as far. Now, let's look at the comparison. The announcer, he announced at the Beit HaMikdash for the service, he was strong. It was the morning. The Kohen Gadol, this was the service that was late in the afternoon already. He was weak. He had gone through a fast. The night before, he had fasted straight through. And one fasts, he's weak, and his voice becomes much lower. Despite this, his voice traveled so much stronger and further. Another thing, notice that the case of Gavini, the Gemara stated, was the king was traveling along at night, but he heard the voice of this announcer going for a distance of 12 miles. The voice of the Kohen Gadol traveled 40 miles by day. And we know, the Gemara says, that the voice of a person travels much further at night than it does by day. Sound travels much further at night than by day. The Gemara asks why. Why can sound be heard clearer and further at night than by day? The Gemara answers, because the noise of the sun cutting through the heavens, when the sun travels, the edge of the sun has a cutting edge. It literally has to cut through the atmosphere. And this makes a sound which cannot be heard in itself exactly, but it dulls other sounds to an extent. When this noise is gone at night, then the acoustics become so much sharper that at night things can be heard much more clearly, since the sound of the sun's cutting through the heavens is gone. The witness says it's not only the sun. There are many sounds that have power that is heard throughout the entire world that travel, sounds that travel worldwide, or sounds that are world famous that occur throughout the world. There are different explanations on this statement, because the statement itself says simply that there are three sounds that are heard from one end of the world to the other. Of course, the Fanashim explain that it does not necessarily mean that this one sound can be heard throughout the entire world. It means that this is known. Its fame travels. It's heard, meaning its fame travels throughout the world. One is the sound of the sun cutting through the heavens. And this, of course, means that it's throughout the world. It's continuous. The sun revolves around the earth. The earth is stationary. The earth is very, very stationary. The sun revolves around the earth, and revolving around the earth, the sun cuts through continually so that the entire world feels or hears or is affected by the sound of the sun. Another is the sound of the armies of Rome, the Roman armies, which mean the armies of evil, sound of their cries, lustful cries for blood, their cries for evil against Kiddushah, Barmina. This sound travels throughout the earth. This means that there's no corner on earth where you don't have the evil Goyim everywhere. No matter where you go, throughout the entire world, you will find these Goyim who are opposed without reason, without logic, to the Kiddushah, which the Jews stand for. Third is the sound of the Neshama, the pathetic sad sound of the neshama as it leaves the body at the time of death. Pitiful departure when the neshama has to tear itself away from the body where it has been kept, housed so long. The neshama, of course, is very happy to leave. You go to get in it.
But the said parting of the body feels when the Neshama leaves, this sound is heard throughout the world. Again, meaning, of course, that there is death prevalent everywhere. If there's not in one spot, there is another spot. But throughout the world, this motion, this movement of the Neshamot leaving the bodies are continuous. Wherever there is an actual sound, the cry of the Neshama as it leaves the body is something that is pathetic and apparently existed where it could be heard. Because the Gemara says that the rabbis of the Gemara felt that this sound was too tragic, could break people's hearts. The rabbis of the Gemara prayed to Hashem to void this sound, stop the sound, the cry of the Neshama leaving the body. This was halted. But the fame, the knowledge of this occurring is something that no person can escape. There's always awareness that around every area there is death present. As for sure. Remember I say there's another sound too that is prevalent throughout the world, and a cry that reaches the four corners of the earth, that is the cry of childbirth. The screams that take place at childbirth are so penetrating that they could be heard throughout the entire world. Again, this means that births take place throughout the world, but this must be taken literally too in a sense, meaning that we do not have the sharpness of hearing to detect this, but it is so penetrating a scream that it can reach one point of the world to the other. This, some rabbis maintain this to be so. These are the sounds that carry so far, that affect the world. Yehuda says there are five things where we find a difference between the first Beit HaMikdash and the second Beit HaMikdash, meaning that there were five things that existed during the first Beit HaMikdash and were missing at the time of the second Beit HaMikdash. The superiority of the first Beit HaMikdash over the second. Those five were, one was the Aron, the Holy Ark, which housed the tablets, the Luchot. This Aron existed at the time of the first Beit HaMikdash, and then what happened? It disappeared. Sank into the ground, unknown afterwards as to its exact location. And when the Jews returned and rebuilt the Beit HaMikdash, they built the second Beit HaMikdash. Throughout the entire 420 years, the second Beit HaMikdash, there was no Aron. The same room was considered the Kodesh Kadashim, the Holy of Holies. The Kohen Gadol would go into the Holy of Holies, but he would not have the Aron facing him. That part would be empty. In addition, he would not have the kaporet, the cover over the Aron too was missing. That too was hidden with the Aron Kodesh. Missing too were the Kirubim. Kirubim are the two figures of angels, one on each side of the Aron Kodesh. The exact word, the Yehuda says that Kiruv, Ki, is not part of the word. Ki means like. They seem, they appeared like. Ruv means a child, face of a child. That's why in English you have the word cherubim. Cherub is a child. And this, of course, would prove the ignorance of those who interpret these words. Because they use the word cherub thinking that kiruv is a word. It is not. Kiruv means like a ruv. So he wanted to say a child be a reb, not cherub. That's a very important observation. The word for child is rubim, rub, or rubim, plural. Kirubim, these angels had faces of children, meaning pure. These two were missing. And of course, these kirubim were a miracle, because just as the Aron was a miracle, the width of the Holy of Holies was a set amount, set number of feet. And the kirubim were side by side with the wingspan touching, not overlapping, but reaching one, reaching the other. The width of the wings was more than the width of the room. The Aron Kodesh stood between the wings of the kirubim, and the Aron Kodesh, too, still existed in that room. Now, how could you have a width of 10 feet with an area of 10 feet holding matter of 20 feet. Space is limited. Matter can fit into space only as much as space allows. Here you had a miracle of more matter in less space,
than nature would allow. This was one of the miracles of the Beit HaMikdash. The second item, because we mentioned till now, is considered one. In the Holy of Holies, the Aron, the cover for the Aron, the Kerubim, is considered one item. Of those five we said were lacking in the second Beit HaMikdash. Second item, there was the fire at the altar, which burnt straight up. This fire was missing, the fire that came from heaven to accept the sacrifices, miracle fire, which was missing in the second Beit HaMikdash. The Shechina, Ruach HaKodesh, were missing in the second Beit HaMikdash. They did not have the Spirit of Hashem resting there where they could make literally contact with it. This was lacking. And finally, Urim V'Tumim is the chest plate of the Kohen Gadol. Of course, he had to have the Urim V'Tumim. He had to have the chest plate, but it did not have the miracle powers where they could ask questions when the letters on the chest plate would light up and give an answer from heaven. So that article of clothing did exist for the Kohen Gadol and the second Beit HaMikdash too. But the power of the Urim V'Tumim, where the answer would light up directly from heaven, this did not exist. These five were lacking in the second Beit HaMikdash. Yemilah tells us, as a matter of interest, that there are six types of fire. Now, we know fire only as one. Fire is something that consumes. It burns, it leaves ashes, it alters, it changes, it transforms one thing into another. It can transform something that is tangible into something that is intangible, matter to air, to smoke. But there are actually six types of fire, the Yemilah says. One is a type that eats and does not drink. That is our fire. Our fire eats away at things, consumes, but it does not drink water. Fire will not drink up the water. It consumes something that is hard matter, not liquid. There is a fire that drinks and does not eat. This is the fire of fever. Fire within a person who is sick, chas v'shalom, that too is a fire that gives a person extra heat. The heat of this fire of fever, when a person thirsts, a sick person who's got a lot of fever, thirsts for water. He wants to drink. He does not want to eat. Third type of fire is one that eats and drinks, both. This is the miracle fire that Eliyahu HaNavi produced from heaven when he challenged the false prophets to a match, to a test, see whose sacrifice would be accepted. Then he brought a sacrifice, placed water in the Mizbeach, on the altar, and then placed wood in a sacrifice. He called upon heaven to send the fire down, which consumed the wood and the stones and the water too. That was a heavenly fire that ate and drank. Fourth type of fire is a type that eats damp as well as dry. A fire will consume only dry wood. If wood is damp, it will not consume it. It'll just bring out smoke. This is the fire of the Mizbeach. Fire of the Mizbeach would consume even that which was damp. Special, stronger fire. Fifth type of fire is a fire that can overpower other fire, that can actually repel fire. In order to repel fire, we usually use water to repel fire. But there is a fire that repels fire. This is the fire of the Malach, Gabriel. This Malach, you recall when the three prophets, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, were placed in the pit of fire, he, the angel of fire, came down, and though he was fire himself, he repelled, he drove away the fire of the pit, and the three prophets were saved. But this was an actual case, only case, where one fire repelled the second fire. The sixth is a fire that eats fire, that consumes fire, which means one fire that can destroy other fire. This is the fire of the Shekhinah, Spirit of Hashem, which is fire. We find that this consumes fire, because at the time of creation, the Gemara says that Hashem discussed the question with angels, shall man be created? Some angels said yes, some said no. And Hashem destroyed the Shekhinah, the Spirit of Hashem destroyed these angels. were angels of fire. The fire came forth from the Shekhinah and consumed, destroyed these angels. This is the sixth type of fire, the heavenly fire of the Shekhinah, and of course the holiest, greatest of all.
Let's hope that Be'ezrat Hashem will be zocheh to come close to this heavenly fire, which, though it has the power to destroy fire, yet the fire of the Shekhinah is such that it's not only a fire that destroys, it is a fire that gives off warmth and brings close beneath its wing. This is called Tachat Kanfei HaShekhinah, the wings of the Shekhinah, which are all protective. Tzadikim v'choseh, they stay under, they warm themselves under the wings of the Shekhinah. Those who perform its vort, the Yizrael HaKadosh says the Shekhinah, like a mother, takes its children under its wing. Tzadikim are brought close under the Shekhinah, under the protective wing of the Shekhinah, be protected against all evil, especially against the evil of the evil spirits, the evil angel, the Satan, the Yitzhara. Let's hope that we will be zocheh to warm ourselves beneath the protective wings of the Shekhinah, protective wings of the Tzadikim, Ufrat the Tzadik Emet, and with this, through our acts and our deeds, to bring this nachat to the Shekhinah, and the Shekhinah will decide to bring us closer to itself, so that together we'll return to Eretz Yisrael to witness the rebuilding of the Beit HaMikdash, becoming a Mashiach Tzadkenu, Mehera B'Yameinu.